You're listening to a High Voltage Radio Network podcast. Find more at highvoltageradio.com.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy's good!
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings. And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports program produced and hosted by two or more African Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I am your host, the Godfather Nate Milton, joined, as always, by my partner in crime, the leader of Team Lightskin, ladies and gentlemen, Marcus Vandenberg. What is going on, brother Marcus?
Nothing much, Nate. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, man. It's been a interesting week, hot week out here in Virginia. It's particularly humid. I know you don't have seasons out there in L.A., but it's not really pleasant right now.
We have seasons. We have nice season, nicer season, nicest season, and.
And occasionally you get an earthquake.
Yeah. We're about due, folks. It's going to be a very special podcast whenever that happens.
I was going to say, have we ever done a podcast where, even back to the days of the three-man booth, when there was an earthquake?
On air? I think we did have one. With Alfred. We had one. Yeah. We had one on air, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, so fortunately no one was hurt in that one. But when I used to live out in San Diego, I experienced a couple earthquakes. I slept through one of them, and then just kind of woke up, and it was kind of like being on one of those magic beds at one of those seedy hotels for 25 cents.
Just rolling along, yeah.
Yeah, and then a couple years ago, we had a earthquake up here in Virginia.
That's right. That's the one that messed up the monument, right?
Yeah. DC. And that's the one that like everybody was going crazy because it was like an earthquake on the East Coast.
It happens. It's not just us.
Yeah, so hopefully earthquake season will be kind to you guys out there. But how have you been since the last time we talked, brother?
I had my first weekend where it dawned on me that I'm actually like married and stuff. Went to Home Depot.
What brought across this revelation?
Went to Home Depot. Went furniture shopping. Went to Bed Bath & Beyond. And went to Crate & Barrel.
Did you find anything you liked, Brother Marcus?
Oh, we bought a lot of furniture. Yeah, we did our furniture shopping. So, when we moved in, I moved in first to the condo. So, I brought in most of my stuff from my old place into this place. But we have an extra bedroom here that we need to furnish, so our master bedroom is currently empty, and we needed to buy like a new couch for the living room, and I needed to get a desk for the loft area, which I haven't used yet. So we went in and we bought something, so they'll be here in a couple weeks. So 3 weeks from now, I will have a actual desk, and we'll be actually doing the studio or the show from the loft instead of downstairs in the kitchen area.
Okay. So I think the question that the listeners want to know in terms of following up on last week's A-Block discussion is, have you guys found the bed yet? And has anybody written you to extol the virtues of the Sleep Number bed?
No one wrote about the Sleep Number. We did buy a bed, and we bought a mattress, and we upgraded on the mattress to get a pillow top mattress deal. Okay. So it's pretty soft, and it's pretty thick, so it's... I gotta jump up to get in the bed now. but yeah, we did find a bed and a bedroom set and a TV dresser or TV stand for the bedroom. So we should be all set. Just another bill to file under.
Okay, that'll be the subplot to every episode, you know, going forward ever since the wedding. Just Marcus changing from this firebrand writer that caused controversy and got fired from BET to all of a sudden I was gonna say Cliff Huxtable, but that might be a bad
analogy.
Who would be like the next the suburban black sitcom husband, like Carl Winslow? Is he the guy? Uncle Phil,
Carl. It's sad that no one current you think of. I mean, everything just back from the 90s. No one from...
Yeah, I guess the only current guy would be Anthony Anderson on Blackish.
I'll take that.
Yeah, so yeah, you've gone from the rebel journalist to Anthony Anderson on Blackish.
All right, I'll take that.
It's not a bad transition.
No.
So... Now, speaking of transitions, this may be a bad transition, but let's go to the segment that everybody wants to talk about week after week. Everybody except me, I just do it to humor you because that's what tag teams do, you know, much like a marriage. Sometimes, you know, you do stuff that she want to do, she do stuff that you want to do. So every week I do something I don't want to do, but the people want it and Marcus want it, and that is the Hockey Minute. So do you have a Hockey Minute for us this week, Brother Marcus?
I do.
All right, so with somebody back in the truck, hit Marcus's theme music because it is time for Marcus's Hockey Minute, a.k.a. Ask a Hockey Negro.
It's time for the segment that's cooler than a polar bear's toenails.
Gives the puck to Seth Jones. Leg one for Jones. Cutting it, he scores! Seth Jones scores on the feed out of the left wing corner.
It's Marcus's Hockey Minute, a.k.a. Ask a Hockey Negro.
All right. You're going to learn today.
Nate, does the name Mike Babcock ring a bell?
Mike Babcock. It sounds vaguely familiar.
Well, Mike Babcock was the head coach of the Detroit Red Wings, and today he was hired by the Toronto Maple Leafs for, get this, 8 years, $50 million.
$50 million?
Yeah.
Now, forgive my hockey ignorance, but that's kind of why we do this segment. Is Mike Babcock worth 8 years at $50 million, Marcus?
No, he's not. but if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, a team that is... I'm trying to think of an NBA team to compare the Maple Leafs to.
What, a franchise that used to be good and now they've been mired in mediocrity?
Yeah.
How about the New York Knicks, who I'm sure we'll talk about in the next
segment? There you go. Yeah, perfect. They are the New York Knicks of the National Hockey League, where they're supposed to be great, but they're really not great. And their fans are trying to grasp at straws that will reclaim them back to that greatness.
So Mike Babcock is like the Phil Jackson in this scenario?
Yes. And just like the New York Knicks, the Maple Leafs roster is lacking on talent. But they also have a high draft pick like the Knicks. Not as high as the fourth pick, I don't think. I don't forget where the draft is in the NHL draft. But essentially, Toronto had to overpay to get this guy in there. And their hope is that he will be able to turn around this franchise. It's $50 million. That's I mean, that's it comes out to like 6.25 a year, which might be more than most NBA coaches actually. That's a lot of money.
So let's get into the resume then. What has Brother Babcock accomplished and achieved on this particular resume that the Toronto Maple Leafs seem to think is worth that much money?
Well, he has a Stanley Cup. He did
okay,
do that.
Okay.
His winning percentage is 627, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
And he's only missed the playoffs once in his coaching career with the Mighty Ducks in 2004. So he's proven that he's good, but I mean, geez, like that. He's not that good. It's tough to say Detroit because Detroit hasn't missed the playoffs in going on now, what, 25 years almost? So it's hard to say if that was a product of the Red Wings organization or if it was actually Mike Babcock leading this team to the playoffs. So he's going to be tested because the Maple Leafs are not good. They went on a bit of a fire sale at the end of this season, and they really stripped the team, and they're really starting from scratch. So I'm curious to see what they do in the free agency offseason and who they draft and how they rebuild. But it would be good for the NHL, and much like the NBA with the Knicks, if the Maple Leafs were relevant again.
Huh, I'm looking up some of Mike Babcock's stats here on Wikipedia, which is always factually accurate. And
always.
Yeah. It looks like he's had success at both the NHL and also the Olympic level.
Yep.
With Team Canada. And he's an Ontario boy, so there's that tie-in. So it looks like he's a good choice, but was anybody else competing for the services of this guy? Because it seems like they were bidding against themselves.
Well, actually, yesterday the story on Tuesday was that Buffalo was in contract talks with Babcock. And he was technically still employed by the Red Wings until June 30th. And Detroit allowed him to talk to other teams. So essentially he was in play by at least the Maple Leafs, the Sabres, and the Red Wings.
Yeah, that's a lot of money, but I don't know. Like I don't know in terms of the NHL infrastructure, in terms of the type of revenue these teams makes, is like what would the equivalent be? Like let's continue this NBA analogy and let's say this is the Knicks and let's say they want to go after Scott Brooks because Scott Brooks is unemployed at the moment and he's had some success. What would the dollar amount be to make this kind of equivalent?
Oh, for NBA? Let me see. Well, trying to find a list of the highest paid NBA coaches.
Yeah, because $50 million just on its face for 8 years sounds crazy, but I don't know the NHL. Like, I don't know how they living in terms of their revenue.
I don't know how much money Toronto's making as a franchise, but I do know in terms of ticket prices, they're up there. They're probably number one in terms of what they're charging.
So is he the highest paid coach now, just off the top?
Oh, Babcock?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got to be. I'm pretty sure. And I'm looking at the NBA list, and wow. It looks like Doc Rivers is getting $10 million a year.
Huh. So Babcock is the Doc Rivers because he's got one championship. So Babcock is the Doc Rivers of the NHL, basically.
Minus the whole being the GM thing, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because Doc, we'll talk about Doc in segment two. But, like, Doc, great coach, but I don't know if he's that great to warrant that salary. Although, with Doc, is the $10 million just for coaching or is the GM salary factored in with
that? No, that's factored in.
Okay.
And that's over 5 years as well. So, yeah, that's also Steve Ballmer money, too. So, that's a little different.
Yeah, true.
He's out the money to pay him.
He got crazy. He is crazy rich.
Man, he might be crazy.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, that seems like a very, it seems like a move that they had to make, even though I don't know if that's the price they had to pay to get him.
But just to compare, like, Mike Budenholzer, your coach of the Atlanta Hawks.
Yeah, the Booty Man. That's the nickname I'm trying to get caught on with him.
Yeah, like
I don't think it's catching on, though.
I don't think so either.
Coach Booty Man.
He's making $2 million a year.
So, now, that's disrespectful.
Now, he'll get a raise for sure, I'm sure, after this season, but that's a big drop-off from Doc Rivers to a guy who's still in the playoffs.
How much is Pop making per year?
This thing has Pop down as at $11 million. Let me see. That seems like a lot.
It does, but if anybody's going to get
it's worth
that,
it, but you, yeah. You would think the Spurs, you know.
The small market.
Yeah. I mean.
But if anybody's going to get that type of money in a post-Phil Jackson NBA, it should be Pop.
Let's see.
Like, how is Pop only making $1 million more than Doc Rivers, if that's accurate?
That is true.
No disrespect to Doc, but.
Yeah, the story that I found says terms of the contract were not disclosed.
So we can assume that he's making at least $10 million.
Yeah, I would say.
In that neighborhood.
Yeah. And it would make sense that he's the highest paid coach. I mean, he's got the resume to back it up. So that would make sense.
Yeah, so for those that think Pop is just going to walk away. he's going to hit that Terrell Owens line. I got 10 million reasons to be here.
Yep.
So good luck to Babcock and maybe our Toronto listeners. You know, we've got a huge Canadian contingent, including friend of the program, Steve Kassan. Maybe they can let us know how his tenure goes. And is this money well spent?
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see. Like I said, they started off strong this year. When I went up there in December to see them take on the Kings, they were towards the top of the standings, and after that, they just collapsed. So, rough year in Toronto.
Yeah, so that was a pretty good hockey minute, Marcus. I liked how you told the story. You brought up a name that was relatively familiar, and then we made the comparisons to basketball, and then we brought it all the way back full circle. So yeah, that's a great hockey minute right there.
I try to keep it simple.
That's the key. I think the key to the hockey minute is finding ways to relate it to to relate it to something that I can connect with.
Holy fuck! I should have stayed off Twitter.
What's going on Twitter?
The NXT. I just saw a spoiler. You want to know what the spoiler is?
Is it something that's going to make me mad?
Oh, something that's going to make you happy.
Oh, let's save it then. Let's save it.
All right.
Let's save it. Let's go to break. Like we're actually on the air. But let's go to break and come back. And you can give me the spoiler before we get into our five questions.
All right.
All right. So that was Marcus's Hockey Minute, a.k.a. Ask a Hockey Negro. Coming up, we got a lot of great stuff on the show. We're going to get into I Got Five on It, our question segment where we're going to discuss the NBA and the NBA playoffs. And Marcus is going to give us some breaking NXT news. So stick and stay. More Kings of Sport right after this. Like a low machine that was known to convert. No manual that I can find on Dad's machine. I hit a button in his room to turn the laboratory green. What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here? We'll mix with modest and canny combinations to let the world understand. Professor Kevin Madison chased the incredible letterman. I'm the incredible letterman.
Sit down. Thank you. Don't make me. Now, see now what happens. We don't have time for the giving gifts to the audience segment. I'll be honest with you. It's beginning to look like I'm not going to get to tonight's show.
Okay.
Well, here's some statistics. Paul and I have been doing the show 33 years, and that's 6,028 shows. It's a lot of shows. That's pretty much all I got. The only thing I have left to do for the last time on a television program, thank you and good night.
It's not just any day. It's Mr. Throwback Thursday.
Hey, everybody. You remember when hip-hop was full of dope MCs, fly DJs, and human beatboxes? We do, too. My name is Jamie Robinson, and people call me Mr. Throwback Thursday. And along with my co-host, Bill Winters, we take you back to that better time. So come join us every Throwback Thursday for some classic hip-hop discussion, a few tunes, and check in on some people you thought weren't even out there anymore. You can get us on iTunes, Stitcher, and always at our Facebook page at facebook.com/TheMrTBT, or just search for Mr. Throwback Thursday. We're the only one out there. And always remember, new school stale, old school fresh.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Now it's time for Questions with the Kings, a segment where your host will ask questions, make statements, but never ever assume. It's I Got Five on It on the Kings of Sport.
We are back on the Kings of Sport, and if you're hearing that music, you know what time it is. It is time for our newest segment, I Got Five on It, the part of the show where Marcus and I will go down a list of five questions on some of the week's hottest topics in the world of sports. But before we get into that, we got to let you know who we're rolling with each and every week, placetobenation.com. They are your one-stop spot for the latest and greatest in sports, music, comic books, entertainment, pro wrestling, whatever you want, they've got it. You're down with the Kings. The Kings are down with Place to Be Nation. So get down with placetobenation.com. And Marcus, we mentioned wrestling with Place to Be Nation. And in the A block, as we were going to break, you mentioned that there might be something going on at the NXT special that would interest me and probably interest our listeners as well. So what's going on, brother?
We're taping this on Wednesday night, and the NXT show just ended, and Triple H tweeted a photo, and the photo says, tweet says, fight Owens, fight, and Samoa Joe in the same ring. And it's a photo of Triple H in the back, looking at the monitor of Kevin Owens and Samoa Joe.
Okay. And a slimmed down Samoa Joe, if you've been following the man on Twitter.
Yeah, he looks good.
Like, brother.
It's funny how that works, huh?
Like, getting checks will do that for you. Yeah. Being motivated.
TNA, he said, I don't give a fuck, but the Negro calls, oh, I look good.
Right, right. Like, he's like, you know what? I can just kind of let myself go a little bit with TNA, but I got to look good for this. You know, he didn't want to fall into who was your boy, Chris Hero? He didn't want to fall into that trap.
Yeah, he's still looking.
Okay, I'm looking at the tweet right now. Yeah, this is gonna be interesting because this to me says two things. One, NXT is by far, if it wasn't already, the most interesting show on the WWE. In the WWE, might be the most interesting show in all of wrestling. And two, it tells me that everybody that was talking on Monday about, you know, this is Owens' ascension to the main roster, looks like he's going to be down at NXT for a while because he's got some big Samoan business to handle.
Yeah, I did see that on Raw, and while I liked it, I was a little, not disturbed, but confused why we're having the match so soon. I think that's right. A match you could have built to instead of wasting it on a pay-per-view that didn't exist 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it was a great segment, probably one of the better NXT debuts, but again, it feels like they rushed their way to the match. Like, this is something where, especially if Owens is going to be tied up with Samoa Joe for a little while down in NXT, this is something where, you know, he could have just sent a message to John Cena and, you know, hey, you know, we'll, like he said, we'll do this on my terms, on my time. And apparently my terms, my time was at this show in 2 weeks, which shouldn't have been the move, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, unless, you know, what if Owens wins the title and he essentially has two championships that he's defending. He's making appearances both on NXT and Raw every week. I would be in favor of that, but if he's just going there and then losing to Cena, then what's the point of that?
Yeah, see, I think he's just going to lose to Cena.
Oh, man.
Like, I don't think, like, I think eventually Cena's going to drop this, but I don't think.
He hasn't lost yet. That's the thing.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be hit right here and right now to Kevin Owens.
I don't know. That would suck for his first loss to be John Cena.
Hey, what better way to get acclimated to the WWE universe? It's like, you know what?
Welcome, kid.
Everybody's got to do the job sometime.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, NXT, if you're not watching, you probably should be if you're a wrestling fan. And if you're listening to this show, chances are you're at least mildly interested in pro wrestling. So, yeah, I'll have to check that out since I don't have to watch TNA this week.
Lucky you.
I'll catch up on NXT. Now, if Billy Corgan took over NXT, it'd be N-word XT.
Oh, man. That whole thing with the prosthetic leg. Oh yeah.
That, like, you thought the N-word was bad. Personally, to me,
that's more offensive.
That was more offensive to me.
Because he is a veteran, correct?
Yeah, he's a veteran. And he took the man's leg off and choked Kurt Angle out with the prosthetic leg. And I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah.
And like Brian said on our review and Impact, if you're going to do something like that, you might as well give that to EC3 so at least it means something.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to do the despicable thing, at least make it count in terms of getting heat for the guy that probably will be your champion.
I do wonder about TNA and their long-term future. I mean, that September date would worry me as a TNA fan, because if, you know, we see with other regular TV shows, quote unquote, that, you know, it's not a big thing for a show to get canceled. Except the stakes are a little higher when you have talent that you need to pay. So I would be really nervous about that September date.
Yeah, the relationship between TNA and Destination America is funny. Like, the Destination America seems to do things with no rhyme or reason. Like, changing the nights from Fridays to Wednesdays. Like, if you're going to do that, why wouldn't you just wait until after the pay-per-view and then have, like, a reset? You know, it's almost like remember when they started and they had the first show, then they were like, that's not the real kickoff, this is the real kickoff?
Yeah.
It's like a lot of strange decisions by this network. It's like Dave Meltzer was saying, I think it's probably buyer's remorse. It's like, oh, hell, we wanted to do something big, and now we were drunk. Somebody had too many margaritas, and we bought TNA, or we signed it, got into bed with TNA, and now we wake up, and she was a 10 at 2, and now she's a 2 at 10, and we want to get out of business with Dixie.
Yeah, and if I'm Dixie, I don't know what the next step is besides going to YouTube, but you can't really make any money off that.
I keep telling you, man, Oprah Winfrey Network. Either that or BET.
BET,
aren't they getting, you said they're getting into boxing, so they could have like a whole combat sports night.
Yeah, they're doing the Andre Ward fight in June, but the key is that's a black fighter. There's not enough black people in that roster for BET to be interested in them, to be honest. Hey,
TNA said nigga. That's about as black as you can get in wrestling.
That's true.
Have Commissioner Bow Wow, he could just come over from 106 and Park since he's not doing that anymore.
What happened to the Urban Wrestling Federation?
Oh, the Melly Mel thing? Yeah. I think they lasted for about a year, and then that was a wrap. Mm. So yeah, next time we see, next time we talk to Pollock and Ting, we got to do that review. That's got to be the Kings of Sports / Review Away crossover, and we'll do the first Urban Wrestling Federation pay-per-view, which ended with a drive-by.
Oh, man.
Like, so much for presenting positive black images. You know what would be cool? If we end this show with a drive-by. Right, Melly Mel? Raw! So there's your wrestling, a little bonus wrestling commentary this week on the Kings of Sport. But as I mentioned off the top, we are in a new segment called I Got Five on It. Shout out to the Loonies. But this week, Marcus, last week we had five questions on Deflategate and the Tom Brady suspension. This week we're going to ask five questions about the NBA and, in particular, the NBA playoffs. So if you are ready, I'm going to pose the questions to you and see what you're thinking right now.
All right.
In the A block in segment one, we mentioned Clippers coach Doc Rivers and the Clippers, I guess you could say they choked. Some people would say the Rockets won it. I tend to think the Clippers lost that series and now they're sitting at home, which brought great joy to all Lakers fans everywhere, from Kerry Champion to Magic Johnson to the Professor KME and even Ronnie in Houston, who I don't know how you can be a Lakers fan and a Rockets fan. That don't even make sense.
Let me just, before we get into the question, you Lakers fans are some punks. I mean, let the Clippers live. You know, just because the Lakers aren't in the playoffs doesn't mean you have to cheer at their pain.
Yeah, it is real salty, though.
It is salty. It's like, come on.
That's like if my wife left me, and then I'm just sitting there all mad, and then all of a sudden I say, oh, Marcus, he about to get married. Then Marcus' fiance leave him at the altar. I'm like, yes.
Yeah. Show you right.
We in this together.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lakers fan has been pretty annoying the last couple of days.
Well, I mean, a couple of days? How about a couple of decades?
Yeah, that too.
Love you, Lakers.
Yeah. We'll start with the Clippers. And there's been a lot of blame placed at the feet of Chris Paul. And I'm not saying that he should be exempt from blame, Marcus. But I do think that he's bearing the unfair amount of blame for their collapse. So I'm going to give you four names, and I want you to rank them in order of who has the most to blame for the Clippers not advancing to the Western Conference Finals.
Okay.
All right. Choice one, Chris Paul. Choice two, Blake Griffin. Choice three, Doc Rivers, the coach. Or choice four, Doc Rivers, the GM. What order would you put in terms of who deserves the most blame for the Clippers not advancing?
I'd like to throw in number five, Shelly Sterling, who showed up and took her seat during that third quarter of game six, I believe.
Oh, see, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Wow. Bad juju in the building and Clippers. Oh,
number one Clippers fan.
Mm-hmm. I guess from top to bottom, I would put Doc Rivers, the GM. Number two... I guess Doc Rivers, the coach, and number three, Chris Paul, and number four, Blake Griffin.
I think that's the way I'd go too, because, you know, a lot of people were saying, you know, oh, Chris Paul, he was, you know, an MVP candidate, and he's this and he's that, and he's never gotten out of the second round. And it's like, come on, man, we have such a short attention span. This is the guy who on one leg basically got you to this second round.
Yeah.
Against the defending world champion San Antonio Spurs. And so it's like, I don't see how you question the guy. The only thing that I would question is he's the leader of that team, and there's no way he should have allowed that collapse to happen in game six. But other than that, every other game, Chris Paul, he played pretty well. Blake, you know, he could have shown up bigger in some spots, but I don't put a lot of fault on him. Doc, the coach, you know, he had some questionable decisions here and there. But ultimately, I think this thing was doomed from the get-go because of the team that Dr. GM has assembled. You know, it's when you've got – and God bless Matt Barnes and J.J. Redick. Those are some guys that I think can be valuable parts of a championship team. But when they're playing as many minutes as they have to play, that's not a good sign for the depth of your team.
Well, I don't think it was a starter. I mean, it's the bench. I mean, they just didn't have a bench all season. It was an issue – during the All-Star break when they had a chance to trade for someone, they didn't, and that part of that is because they didn't have the cap space, really. They did acquire Austin Rivers, who turned out to be a pretty decent addition to that team, despite all the jokes on Twitter about Austin. And, you know, I just think at the end of the day, when you're trying to, you're starting these prolonged series, you just run out of gas, and I think at a couple times in that Houston series, the Clippers just ran out of gas, and especially in game six where it just felt like they just had nothing on their jump shots. Defensively, they're getting beat. And they just couldn't score. I mean, when DeAndre Jordan is out there missing dunks, you just know that it's not your night. And, you know, I don't think that's really Chris Paul's fault. I don't think that was Blake Griffin's fault. I think part of that is coaching and the rotations that the Clippers were using and sort of driving these guys into the ground when you did have bodies. While they're not the greatest bodies, and, you know, Spencer Hawes and, you know, Hito Turkoglu on the bench, they were at least on the bench and they weren't getting any playing time. So it's hard to really fault the players for this one.
You know what? Who would have been a nice piece of this, but unfortunately he was injured, and maybe this plays into the lack of depth on that bench, because this is somebody that I actually think could have helped. You know, he's a guy that I don't think you, much like Matt Barnes, because I'm not disputing Matt Barnes' talent, but I think if he's just starting small forward, then that shows me that you know, that's a hole that needs to be improved upon. But I think if Nate Robinson were healthy, because he had a little time at the end of the year with the Clippers, mm-hmm. like that's a guy, you know, a change of pace guy, an attitude guy off the bench, in addition to some of the other guys that they had that, like Nate Robinson, you know, you could say he's a head case, but he wouldn't have let him choke away that lead. Like, he would have been out there fighting somebody or something.
Yeah, I mean, during his time with the Clippers, he wasn't very good at all. And he was on a couple of 10-day contracts, and I think eventually decided to go with Lester Hudson instead of Nate. But yeah, I mean, the bench was, I mean, not good. And part of that was because in the offseason, they traded Jared Dudley to Milwaukee. And Jared Dudley could have been someone that could have used off the bench in the small forward spot. So, I mean, I'm curious to see. They have to keep DeAndre, or at least try to. And there have been stories about DeAndre's relationship with Chris Paul and how that might play into his contract situation. But if he does stay, you're looking at three max contract guys on this team between Jordan, Griffin, and Paul. So I'm not sure how much money will be left to sort of build out the rest of that team.
And, you know, it's kind of ironic in a way. Like, the one guy that, you know, deep down in his heart of hearts that Doc Rivers wanted on this team but was not allowed to get for the Clippers was out there doing big things for the Wizards. Like, you know, that's the guy Doc really wanted.
Paul Peasy.
He wanted the truth. He wanted the human turtle to be out there taking big time shots. But yeah, so better luck next year for the Clippers. I think they're not in bad shape, but I do think that this is the collapse more so than the loss. Because, you know, anytime you go out there and put it up on the court, you know, one team's going to win, one team's going to lose. But I think it's the way that they lost that just leaves a bad taste in the mouth for Clippers fans out there. So hopefully they can get things together and improve that roster and ban Shelly Sterling from coming to any of these games in the future.
Well, let's just be real. I mean, we would have been saying the same thing if they lost in the first round to the Spurs. Regardless of what happened, we would have said, oh, they couldn't get past the first round, blah, 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 blah. So now they lose in the second round. They choked out in the second round. So I think either way, they would have been.
I think it's worse, though, because I think, you know, if they lost that game 7 to the Spurs, I think, you know, there is a little bit more honor in that than losing to the Rockets, excuse me, who they beat. You know, they smashed the Rockets in two of those games. Like it's like this is a team that you are obviously better than, and you had a 19-point lead going into that third quarter. Like, you should not be sitting at home right now. So I think that makes this loss worse than them losing game 7 to the Spurs would have been.
I think it's worse, yes, but I still think the criticism would have been the same. They would have found reason to criticize. The same Laker fans who are talking about the Clippers now losing to Houston would have been talking about them losing to the Spurs. So in that essence, it really doesn't matter when they lost. It just matters that they lost.
That's true. So let's go from teams that are not in the conference finals to teams that are in the conference finals. And these next two questions are going to be pretty easy. Basically, it's who you got. So let's start with the East, and let's go with the Atlanta Hawks and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Marcus Vandenberg, who you got?
I am going with the Atlanta Hawks.
Really? In how many games?
7.
Okay.
I think defensively, Cleveland is not a great team. And I think Atlanta's team will sort of cause Cleveland some problems because, you know, in the middle, the really turnaround for this team was when they acquired Mozgov for the center to sort of fill that defensive presence in the paint. But Atlanta, their roster isn't built with guys who really attack in the rim like that. You have guys like Horford and Millsap who can step back in the perimeter and shoot jump shots. So I think Mozgov at times will be lost and sort of inefficient defensively. And I think that in terms of their depth, that Atlanta is a little deeper team than this Cleveland team currently, who's injured and banged up. And I think this will be the time that Cleveland can't get over the hump. I mean, I think ever since Kevin Love went down, we sort of had been expecting them to fade out of the playoffs. And I think Atlanta will be that team that can get past them.
Huh. Well, first of all, I will say that I hope your prediction comes true. But I will say, and this pick that I'm going to make, Marcus, is partly based off of my analysis, but also partly based off of superstition. So I'm going to go with the Cleveland Cavaliers because I think if I pick the Atlanta Hawks on this program, they're going to get swept.
Reverse jinx.
Exactly. So I'm calling the reverse jinx, and I'm picking the Cleveland Cavaliers in six games, you know, partly because of superstition. But in terms of analysis and just breaking down the X's and O's, Atlanta's the better team. I don't think there's any way not to acknowledge that. But I still will say that Cleveland has the two best individual players in LeBron James and Kyrie Irving. And with
I would say that I think they have the best 1 through 2, but I think 3 through 8 would be the Hawks.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's true. The question, though, is, you know, if LeBron is at LeBron peak level and Kyrie is, you know, healed after, you know, getting banged up in the last series against the Bulls and he's playing, you know, close to his peak, will the Hawks be able to beat those two guys 4 out of 7 games? And I don't know. You know, I'd like to say they can, but, you know, it's already happened to Marcus. We got quite a scare in that Wizards series, man, from old geriatric Paul Pierce. So if Paul Pierce and a one-armed bandit John Wall can put a scare into us, you know, I'm not gonna take anything for granted against the best player in the world and his new sidekick.
Yeah, I think having home court will help. Definitely, but they need to, if they can, get out to a early 2-0 lead before going to Cleveland, because if they go back 1-1 or God forbid down 0-2, then it'll be a wrap.
It's a wrap. And speaking of wrap, real quick, shout out to the Hawks organist. I don't know if it's an actual organist or if it's just like somebody playing a track.
Nah, it's a black dude. It's Sir Foster. It's an actual dude.
Okay. See, that messed up my whole theory, though, because, you know, a lot of times, you know, the organist at these baseball games or NBA games is like an old white lady. Mm-hmm. And I so wanted it to be an old white lady because I was watching the game before we started recording tonight. And as the Hawks were bringing the ball up, the organist was playing Southern Playlistic. And I just wanted it to be like 65-year-old Ethel jamming out on the keys.
Now, a couple years ago, he did the All-Star game.
Okay.
And, let me see if that's on YouTube. It might be on YouTube somewhere, but he, during the All-Star game, he was just playing the hits. So he's an actual dude, black dude.
Yeah, he's pretty good then. I've just been listening to the Hawks game as I've seen him, you know, during the course of the playoffs. And, like, for whatever the controversy was at the beginning of the year with the arena being a little too dark, a little too much hip-hop, like, it seems like a really cool experience, especially now in the playoffs. Like, as much as Atlanta fans can be apathetic at times, the city seems to have rallied behind the Hawks.
Yeah, which is good because, well, they're down 15. Yeah, they're notorious for their fan base, especially for the Hawks, not really showing up. And I did see that tickets were still on sale for game one as of yesterday, so that's not a good sign. So hopefully here on out, they'll actually fill up the Phillips Arena.
I hope so. And let's move to question number three, and I got five on it. We talked about the Eastern Conference Finals, so obviously we're going to the Western Conference Finals. Rockets, Warriors, Marcus, who you got?
Warriors. And I would say Warriors in five.
Yeah. Like, the game one from last night, like, that was, to me, that was Houston's best chance to make a statement. Like, I don't think Golden State is going to come in any, like, I don't think Golden State is going to come in as rusty as they looked in the first half of game one.
Yeah.
Like, you had an opportunity to go out there and really put them away, or not put them away, but at least make a statement, put some fear in them. But yeah, this is going to be a wrap. Like, I say, at most, we're going six, but I don't, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it went five.
You know what's crazy about this Golden State team is David Lee, who was once a 2010 guy, is now sort of relegated to just another dude off the bench who barely gets any run in the playoffs. I mean, if he was right in terms of his health, I mean, could you imagine how good this team could be?
I don't know, though, because David Lee, I think that David Lee, I've always been a fan of David Lee and David Lee's game, but I think that part of the ascension of the Warriors is due in part to the injuries that they dealt with the last couple seasons. And, you know, with guys like Lee and guys like Bogut not being able to play, it's giving them a chance to see what Draymond Green can do. And I think that's kind of been the key, you know, getting that young core off and running with Thompson and Steph Curry and adding Draymond into that mix. You know, I think Lee's a nice little player. He's a good luxury to have coming off the bench. But, you know, unfortunately, I think his days as a starter have long since passed him unless Doc Rivers, the GM, picks him up.
Well, I mean, he was hurt this year, but last season he did average 18 points and 9 rebounds.
Wasn't he an
all-star
a couple years ago?
Yeah, I mean, he was fine up until this year. He had averaged 18, 20, 16 and a half. So I think whatever lingering health issues he's had from the start of the season have carried over, and now he's in a situation where the team is winning and they don't really want to mess up that flow by trying to work him back into the rotation.
Yeah, it's almost a Wally Pipp situation because, you know, as much as I've been a fan of David Lee, at this point you can't mess with that roster. You know, Draymond Green, a candidate for Defensive Player of the Year, like, you can't affect that chemistry by trying to, you know, fit a square peg into the proverbial round hole.
I believe he's on a max contract, and so is Iguodala, who's on the bench as well. So they have two max guys coming off the bench.
That is crazy. Like, I remember when Andre Iguodala was like the hot young guy for the Philadelphia 76ers. Like, that's how old we're getting.
Yeah, not so much anymore. And he's someone who, you talk about David Lee, like, Iggy's fallen off. I mean, even the season before last, he wasn't good. He hasn't really been good since he got to Golden State. And he sort of adapted to this new role off the bench, but in terms of what he was at one point, I mean, those days of his Philly career are long gone.
Yeah. So we both got the Warriors advancing in relatively easy fashion. Marcus, in terms of the East, has the Hawks advancing, and I have the Cleveland Cavaliers advancing. So we'll see. And next week, I think we're going to put out a call to Cleveland and talk to our Cleveland correspondent, Hat Club Andy, to get his pulse on what's going on in Cavalier land. But the next topic, Marcus, question number four. I know you like to gamble. We discussed at length on this program your adventures out in Vegas. And there was a bit of a lottery, a game of chance, if you will, last night. And, man, it must really suck to be a Knicks fan. Like, you can't even get losing done right.
Sucks for the Knicks.
The Knicks, or as we call them, the Maple Leafs of the NBA.
Yes.
But, yeah, the draft was last night, Marcus. The Timberwolves, the big winners. Actually, the Lakers, you know, even though the Timberwolves got the first pick, I'd say the Lakers might have wound up with the best stroke of luck. Even Kobe Bryant was out tweeting about it. You know, it's great after the crappy season we had to be rewarded, which seems like a weird way to kind of take a victory out of this. The 76ers got the third pick, and as we mentioned, the Knicks got the fourth pick, and rounding out the top five, the Orlando Magic got the fifth pick. So what were your thoughts on the draft lottery? And, man, I know you used to spend a lot of time up in New York with the school up there. It's got to really be a bad time for Knicks fans. Like, you can't even lose right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I understand why Knicks fans would be frustrated, but I think this draft is so deep that being at four is not going to kill them. I think it might take some of the pressure off them if they were the number one pick and say they drafted Okafor and he ended up becoming Sam Bowie, then, you know, that's another black eye on the Knicks franchise. But being at the fourth spot, I think they have a little more flexibility, and I think they need a point guard, and I think there'll be a point guard left over at that spot. So, I mean, they're fine. They're just being the Knicks. So, and as for the Lakers, they're in a good spot. They're going to probably take a big man, either Okafor or Towns, whoever's left. And you combine that with Julius Randle, who's returning from his freak leg injury, and whoever they signed in free agency, and the returning Kobe Bryant. So I think next season, they really have no excuses not to be a playoff team.
Yeah, I think that the Lakers should be in good shape. The Timberwolves are going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Especially if they go with Karl Anthony Towns and you team him up with Wiggins. Like, that's a good young team. The Knicks, though, is interesting because I've heard a lot of talk about Moutier possibly being the pick for New York.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think that fit would work?
I mean, I think between... Personally, I'm a bigger fan of D'Angelo Russell at point guard over Moutier. I just haven't seen
Ohio State.
Yeah, I haven't seen enough of Moutier because he was in China to really, you know, compare the two. But based on what I saw of Russell this year at Ohio State, he's a very talented point guard. And Philadelphia is someone who could use a point guard as well. So if he were to get past Philly, I'd be surprised there.
Huh. That's going to be interesting. Like, you know, the draft is always a hit or miss proposition, but you're right. I think compare this year's draft to last year's draft, and I think even if you're a Knicks fan and you're disappointed that for all the losing you did, you still didn't get a top two pick, you know, you still should be in good shape.
Yeah, they'll be fine. But go back to Philly, you pair, say, Tate Russell with Nerlens Noel, who turned out to be pretty good his rookie season, and Joel Embiid will be back next season. That's not a bad trio to sort of build your team around.
Philly's interesting because this is like they did all of that. They did all of that tanking and then the, you know, unloading of talented prospects, and it'd be interesting to see if all of their machinations kind of come to fruition, because you can only play the, you know, futures game for so long, and it feels like Philly's been doing this for at least two or three seasons.
Yeah, they have one first-round pick, and they have three second-round picks, and I'm sure they'll have to trade some of that, but they can't sign four rookies. So they do have some options to maybe make it move up to maybe grab a second first-round pick or maybe just stash picks for the future.
No, the Celtics have a ton of picks this year, or is it next year where they've got all the picks?
They have the 16th pick and the 28th pick.
Okay.
And the 33rd pick. So they have three in the top 33, which is good.
And they might be able to package that. I'm actually like some of the moves that Danny Ainge has made.
And they have the 45th pick as well. So, yeah, they have a bunch.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see. But, I'm very intrigued to see what Minnesota can do, because it's like, man, if you're a longtime Timberwolves fan, I'm sure in the aftermath of the Kevin Love trade, a lot of those people were just like, man, we gave away the franchise, and now they're in a lot better shape now than they were with Kevin Love.
Yeah, I mean, if everyone's healthy, they've Rubio and Tevin Martin.
And, like, this could be a real fun team to watch, man.
So watch, I thought LeBron just shoved Millsap in the chest. yeah, I mean, between Wiggins and Rubio, and having Garnett there to sort of mentor those guys, I think he's coming back for at least one more year before he probably becomes part owner of that team. But having KG around to sort of get those guys in check, and Zach LaVine, we forgot about him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I forgot all about him.
Plus, they have Anthony Bennett as well. So they have some young pieces there that they could be fun to watch.
Yeah, that could be a really fun team to watch. So, but, yeah, that's interesting about the KG thing, because I hadn't heard that. So you really think that that KG is fit for ownership?
I do.
Not that he can't handle it, but I'm talking about his temperament.
Oh, I mean, I'm not talking about, like, a majority. I'm talking about just enough to...
Kind of like a figurehead,
a
lifetime achievement award from the Timberwolves.
Yeah,
that'd be cool though. Like if he was actually on the phones making trades, and like, "Hey KG, it's Mark Cuban. Do you think we could work out a deal for Wiggins? Anything is possible. Anything possible." Oh, but this is the I Got Five on It segment of the program, and so we've got one final question for you, Marcus.
All right.
This is episode 112, Where the Players Dwell.
Oh, boy.
So, in the celebration of this momentous occasion, what is your favorite all-time song by R&B group 112?
Let me pull up the 112, the starter for you. That's how long it's been since they've been relevant.
You know they made a comeback in 2014.
Yeah,
the reunion.
It's either Peaches or Cream or Only You. I think only You, because they had Biggie and Mace.
Yeah, the Only You, to me, that's still the best one. And it's not even for anything they particularly did. It's just like Biggie's verse on that. It's still great. Peaches and Cream was solid. After that, I'm trying to think. What else?
Oh, Love Me.
Oh, yeah. Love Me was good. I liked Cupid, too. Cupid wasn't a bad song. That was like Cupid, I think that came out 96, 97. Because that was like the jam when I was in college.
112. Another group that Diddy ruined.
Yeah, I think that's a better question. Like, how many groups did Diddy ruin?
All the groups.
Like, pretty, yeah. Like, Craig Mack, Total, 112.
Dino Jones, he was a bad boy dude, right?
Yeah. What was the group that he did for Making the Band? Not the one with Dylan, but the other one, the girl group. Because he ruined them, too.
Oh, hold on, let me see here. Dream?
Yeah, he ruined them.
He loves you not, yeah.
The Dylan, like that was probably one of my favorite. Oh, damn. Uh-oh.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Oh, that could be the series right there. DeMar Carroll looks like something's up with his knee. Took a hard spill to the floor, so yeah.
Oh, he's holding. Oh, my God.
Yep.
All right, Cavs in five.
Yeah, that's not a good look. Not a good look.
Boy.
Unless he can go to Germany and get that Kobe blood transfusion. Oh, man.
There's the replay.
Yeah, look, he just stepped on the defender's foot and tweaked his knee. Oh.
That wasn't his ankle?
It looks like he might have hyperextended it. I mean, I'm not a physician, nor do I play one on a podcast. But yeah, man, it's wow. Oh man, I don't even know who this random white man is, but he kind of looks like a cross between Randy Orton and Dan Cortez. You know the guy that used to do the MTV Sports.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got the sound down because we're doing the show, and he just looked like, oh my God, that's awful. Like, I feel your pain, my Caucasian brother. Oh, so yeah.
That's a game changer.
Yeah. So, yeah, 112. So yeah, Puff Daddy was not good when it came to prolonging careers of artists. So sure, maybe
he got Shine locked up. I mean,
yeah, Mace came back and then disappeared again.
What happened to Loon? Where's Loon at?
Oh yeah.
He got Biddy killed. I mean,
remember when New Edition went on Bad Boy for 1 year?
Yeah.
Like, you know how bad it was? Bobby Brown wasn't even there. Bobby was like, nah, I'm not signing with Diddy.
Young Jot. Gorilla Zoe.
Like, that's crazy because, he had the guy that did John Cena's theme at WrestleMania. He was a Bad Boy artist.
John Cena's theme at WrestleMania. MGK. Oh, Machine Gun Kelly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's part of the new Bad Boy. Can't stop, won't stop. Until we do stop.
Now, here's someone who he hasn't ruined yet. Janelle Monáe.
When did she sign with Bad Boy?
The Electric Lady and... like her first two albums are with...
Because I know originally she was with Big Boy. Like, that's where she started.
Oh.
She was part of that Outkast camp. But Outkast, another group. Like, Outkast is really great artists, but not really the best label runners. Ask Killer Mike.
Yeah, looks like her first two albums are Bad Boy. So
okay,
fingers crossed. And also yeah. French Montana, who really, I mean, yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hey, I mean, he's made it. He's a rapper and he's dating a Kardashian, so he's made it.
Yeah. Not a bit of French Montana fan.
So, ironically, I think the crazy thing with Biggie is if Biggie had lived, would Diddy have found a way to ruin Biggie?
I would say that double album sort of ruined Biddy's career, his legacy. Album's not that good.
The last one?
Yeah.
Hypnotize?
Yeah. If you made that album a single instead of a double, it'd have been nothing but hits. But
there was a lot of filler.
I don't know if that's because he died, so they said, fuck it, let's just roll everything out.
Right.
Because,
there was some good, really good song. Like, Notorious Thugs is still probably one of my favorite Biggie songs. With Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is a lot of filler on that record. Because you got, like, I think there's like two Mad Rapper skits, which, like, we don't need two Mad Rapper skits.
You think our listeners know about Mad Rapper?
Tell them why you mad. I got a right to be mad. This is my fourth album. It's my fourth album. I'm still living with my mama. That's my word, son. I mean, that Ready to Die shit, it was all right.
It was no John Blaze shit.
Yeah, I got John Blaze.
I got John Blaze. The 90s, man.
Yeah, I think the era of the hip-hop, the rap album skit is pretty much dead.
Yeah, I mean, the Fugees, if you want to go back and...
Oh, man.
Fugees, Wu-Tang.
The Fugees, to me, like, they were the kings of the skits. Wyclef in particular. You remember Wyclef's first solo album? Where the whole thing was Wyclef was being tried. Remember the solo record where he had a Guantanamera on it?
I haven't listened to that. No, yeah.
Staying Alive.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, and the best line of Staying Alive, which brings it back into sports, is on the remix. He was like, saying everything that might happen this year and then everything that won't happen this year. And he's like, will you have sex without a condom this year? No, that ain't going to happen. Will the Knicks win the championship this year? Nah, man, that ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
And he was right. He was right. Who knew? Wyclef was a prophet. He might be a terrible politician that steals money from his charity and wears bikinis while washing his motorcycle. But he was right with the New York Knicks. So so that was I Got Five on It / Hawks Eulogy / Hip Hop Trivia on episode 112, Where the Players Dwell. But if that was not enough randomness and ratchetness for you, we've got segment four on the way. So, Marcus, I think we're going to take a break and come back and give these people what they want.
Sounds good.
Sounds good. So I think we're going to go out to the sounds of 112. I have no idea what song I'm going to pick, but I'll just hit the random 112 button right here, and we'll go out to 112 something something pay me my money, Diddy. Which is like the parenthetical on all their songs.
Yeah.
Cute, pay me my money, Diddy. Only you can pay me my money, Diddy. Peaches and cream is all I'm going to be able to eat if you don't pay me my money, Diddy. So... Don't touch that dial. We got more Kings of Sport right after this.
Girl, if I told you I love you, that doesn't mean that I don't care.
That one is hot fire.
I'm not gay no more. I am delivered. For all you black folks out there.
Oh man, hey, 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 hey.
Hustle Gang's gonna be there for Shizzle.
What's going on, party people and everybody out there in podcast land? It's your man, Nate. And we'll get back to the show in just a little while. But while we got some time, I just wanted to let you guys know the three ways you can get in touch with the Kings of Sport. Way number one, you can tweet us on Twitter, because that's where people tweet people, apparently. You can hit us up on Twitter at KOS_POD. That's CosPod on Twitter. Way number two, you can email us at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. That's thekingsofsport@gmail.com. And finally, you can hit us up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thekingsofsport. So there you have it. Those are the three ways you can get in touch with us. You can leave feedback. You can join the discussion. Three ways you can be down with the Kings. We good, Marcus? Like, do we have to pay warranty for this? Because I ain't got G-Funk money.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at facebook.com/thekingsofsport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
We're back on the Kings of Sport, ready to close up shop for yet another week. But before we do, I got to tell you about the good people at High Voltage Radio. Now, we all know that you love listening to podcasts, of course. You're listening to one right now. So if you tell me you're not, you're a liar, and I don't respect your opinion, unless you keep downloading the show, then all things are negotiable. everybody's got a price. Ain't that what DiBiase always told us?
That's true, but he also had a slave with him, so is he really the guy you want to ride with?
Hey, some people call him a slave. I call him a wrestling superstar. Tomato, tomato.
Yeah.
Tomato, tomato, Virgil Vincent. But if you are looking for some new podcasts, check out the High Voltage Radio roster of podcasts, including Attack of the Fangirls, Axology, Bayside High and Drunk, The Gravy Age, of course, Mr. Throwback Thursday featuring frenemies of the program, Bill and Jamie, Must Hate Zombies, the Mad Mock Show, Mustache Cash Dash, Pittsburgh Nerd. Shows are so good I can't even pronounce them. And finally, the Ebony and Ivory Cast. And, of course, the Kings of Sport podcast can be found at High Voltage Radio. So check out HighVoltageRadio.com for the freshest, hippest, and some would say weirdest selection of podcasts available on the internet.
Yeah, I was about to say, we probably have the most normal name out of that group.
Yeah, like...
I'm not passing any judgment, guys, but... the Gravy... They said the Gravy Podcast? The what?
The Gravy Age.
What the hell is that about?
The Gravy Age Podcast. I'll read you the program description.
Okay.
Chris and Chris, one is CH, one is K. Chris and Chris are bringing you the latest in comic culture page to screen and everything in between. So yeah, you're not about that life, so that podcast will not appeal to you. How about the Ebony and Ivory Podcast?
Yeah, what's that about?
The Ebony and Ivory Podcast is a podcast where two friends, one black and one white, talk about their mutual love of video games.
Okay.
You might be able to get into that.
Probably not, but no. All right.
There's a larger chance you'll be listening to that than the Gravy Age.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm still waiting for you to check out an episode of Bayside High and Drunk and let me know what you think.
I'm still black cinema, man. I'm still...
You know what they say, once you go black podcast, you never go back.
Man, I found out the reason why I liked them so much.
Why?
Because they say the stuff I would like to say on this podcast, but I can't because... what does Jacoby tell Jalen?
Don't get fired.
Exactly. They have no filter.
Yeah. I love their podcast. It is like there are some shows that are good, and other shows that like this is one of those shows that it's not just good, but it feels relevant.
Yeah.
Which is almost a strange thing to say about a comedy podcast, but it especially in times like these, it feels relevant to what's going on. Especially like the Jungle Fever podcast, or they did one on Do the Right Thing, which was really good. Black on Black Cinema. They are not a part of the High Voltage Radio Network, but you should definitely check them out and tell them that the Kings of Sport sent you. So Marcus, it's segment 4. We like to talk about ratchet things, and the playoffs always are interesting because, you got the games, you got the pre-games, you got the sideline interviews, and then you got the post-game interviews, and apparently one, I wouldn't call a crasher, a party crasher, because somebody invited her there, but she was not the person that the media came to talk to after game one of the Western Conference Finals, but she stole center stage. So let the people know if they haven't seen what went down after Warriors-Rockets game one.
So Steph Curry had his press conference after the game, and instead of being by himself, he had a visitor, a guest, his 2-year-old daughter, Riley, who joined him at the podium. And Riley stole the show. She quickly knew that she was on camera, it appeared like, and she started hamming it up and yawning and at one point told Steph to be quiet.
You missed the best part because to me the best part was when she went down under the table and then popped up like she was making an entrance, like it was her show.
Yeah.
like you can tell this is not the first time this kid's been on TV.
It's not. There's a ESPN had a clip earlier where the day when Steph accepted his MVP award, they were filming something, and she made an appearance during that. She's made an appearance during Steph Curry, Steph's brother, during the MBDL game. She made an appearance in the background, so she's been around the cameras, and you would think, oh, cute moment. My wife personally said this is the best press conference ever.
Yeah, I think anybody with a heart would think that it was great. And, the only person I think that could have a problem with it would be who was the guy that played for the Cowboys with the clown and baby? Like that grandfather.
Joseph Randall?
Joseph Randle, yeah. Like, Joseph Randle's dad is probably the only person who would take offense. What's this clowning baby doing on TV? But other than that, I don't think anybody would have a problem with this, Marcus.
You're funny because you haven't met the media before.
Uh-oh, what's going on with the media?
So after this cute moment, ha ha ha, great. Ramona Shelburne tweeted out, "My man, Windhorse ESPN, taking the most unpopular position ever, saying NBA might need to ban kids from podiums so reporters can ask questions."
Wow.
And then another guy from a North Carolina paper, let me find out. He said,
Windhorse wasn't the only person.
No, of course not. Steph Curry's kid is cute. That doesn't mean she should have been at presser. There are professionals on deadlines here with jobs to do, too.
Whoa. Okay, first of all, before we get into the Windhorse stuff, Marcus, as a journalist, did you have a problem with the child being at the press conference?
No, of course not, because I've been to these press conferences and they're usually boring and dry, and you're not really getting anything from the athletes because they're saying the same canned answers. You know, for the journalists who are complaining about, oh, we're on deadline, that's the story, right? Riley Curry, she's the story. Do that story instead of your boring gamer that you're going to write instead. So I'm not sure why this is an issue. This isn't the first time we've seen kids at press conferences. We had Derrick Rose and his son, who was mean mugging, in the last round. We've had CP3 and his kid. He's usually out there when Chris Paul's out there. We have Blake's kid made an appearance during the last round. Blake's kid needs a tan. Looks a lot like his mom. So I don't understand why all of a sudden this is now a big deal for the media members who are on deadline. Boo-hoo.
Right. Go ahead.
What was funny was what sort of started things for Riley was when Mark Spears was asking his questions to Steph Curry, and that's when it sort of went haywire. So I thought that was funny.
So this is all Mark's fault.
Essentially, yeah.
That's what happens when you don't come back on the show, Mark.
Yeah.
It's getting broad in national controversy. But real quick, like, let's go back because I've got some issues with what Brian Windhorse said. But to be fair to at Windhorse ESPN, Ramona Shelburne, why are you snitching on people?
Yeah. And like, I don't think Windhorse is even at the game. So that's even more. Yeah.
So if I'm Windhorse and I wake up and I see this tweet from Ramona, my man at Windhorse ESPN taking the most unpopular position ever, I'd be like, hey, Ramona, if you get jammed up, don't mention my name, man.
Yeah. He has not tweeted today, so.
Yeah, because before we came back, I was just trying to check out, you know, if he had made a statement about this or anything of this nature, and there was no, like, the most recent news was him talking about the Cavs game and Monty Williams being fired.
Yeah.
So, Windhorse is keeping a low profile on this one. But that's ridiculous. Like, I get it from one standpoint in that, you know, you got a job to do. But if you are a columnist, if you are a journalist, you alluded to it, Marcus, isn't the story of, you know, the father and the child, isn't that a much more relatable story and probably a story that your readers would enjoy more than Steph Curry had this to say about his defense and this to say about his shooting efficiency?
Definitely. I mean, you could even do a bigger story about, you know, it seems like especially after NBA games, we see this. We don't really see this with NFL. Well, I just really don't have, they go straight to pressers usually right after the game. They don't have that cool off period, but you can find a story in this instead of being just a curmudgeon. And if people wonder why the general public hates the media because they say stupid shit like this. It's just like, come on. I don't think Windhorse has any kids, but I was like, do you not have any kids of your own? Could you not see yourself in the same situation as Steph where you just got out of this game? He told the story how it happened. I guess he was walking to the presser, and he came across his wife and his daughter, and I guess Riley had asked Steph's wife if he did go with Daddy to the presser, and she had already agreed to. So when Steph came by and told his wife, oh, yeah, I still have to do media, he said there is no telling Riley no at that point. So she decided to tag along, and he said he probably didn't think she'd be back at another press conference, but, you know, he wasn't going to tell her no. So, I mean,
you know, just, it's funny because if you look at these playoffs, I would say my three favorite moments, two of them have involved fathers and their children. The, you know, the first moment being, you know, that great moment when Austin Rivers was just going off, and you had, you know, Doc just had that moment, and Chris Paul was telling him, you know, hey, don't even be a coach right now.
Be a father. You know, just be a father.
Yeah. That was a really cool moment. And then this moment at the press conference, it's like, side note, hey, media, shout out to Black Fatherhood. Message.
I was going
to
say, yeah, that's. Now, if this was, let's say, Chandler Parsons' daughter. I hate that we have to do this every week. It feels like every week we have to just ask the question, what if? Because you never know.
What if we went through the looking glass on this? It's funny because I think, and this isn't the fans, this is the media, you know, or certain people in the media bringing up this concern. But I think the fans actually would like to see more things like this. Right. Because for a large percentage of the NBA viewing public, one of their concerns or one of their complaints is, you know, these are millionaire athletes and they're not like you and me. And it's like, you know, everybody can, even if you don't have kids, everybody can relate to that family bond. And it's like, this is a really cool moment. And come on, Windhorse. Why are you trying to ruin this, man?
Yeah, it's just silly that, you know, we spent most of the day, and by we, I mean, with the media, sort of debating this whole, should kids be allowed at press conferences? I just, come on.
This was like one of the first topics in the first hour of Mike and Mike.
Yeah, this is like a big story, and all because of essentially this Windhorse thing. Because this is not the first time, as we mentioned, where a kid has showed up at a presser. So I just, yeah, it's one of those times where I just like, I just wish the internet and Twitter in particular didn't exist, because I feel like we didn't have these stories in the pre-Twitter era.
Like, you know what my ideal press conference would be? Like, if we're making the hypothetical press conference that would make me the happiest ever.
Steph Curry's mom?
No. I'm taking this even outside of the world of just the NBA. Mm-hmm. If there was a post-WrestleMania press conference with Triple H on the podium with his kids, and in the audience we have Marcus Vandenberg, we got Brian Windhorse, we got... What's my man from Miami with the little ponytail, Bobby Ramos? Was that the dude?
Yeah, that was him.
We got Bobby Ramos and Michelle Beadle. That would be my dream press conference.
No Alfred Tanoa?
Oh, how could I forget it? Yeah, Big Nasty and Bobby Ramos came to the press conference together.
Okay.
So they carpooled. All right. So yeah, that would be my ideal press conference.
Who did the first question?
Michelle Beadle. I think you'd have to give, everybody would have to kind of cede that question to Beadle. Get the tension out of the way.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, the question would be, why are you here, Michelle?
Oh, yeah, that'd be crazy. That'd be crazy. Oh, so that's a good story, Marcus. Like, it's been a quiet week for player off the field type of ratchetness, but the media is always good for at least somebody, you know, saying one or two things that are idiotic during the week. And you know, while Windhorse did not say this directly, you know, we should be accurate. You know, Ramona dropped the dime on him. He did express the sentiment to Ramona. So yeah,
sorry, Windhorse. Gotta trust your coworkers a little more.
Yeah, I feel like Windhorse, man. Windhorse is just an easy target, though, because, like, people in Miami hate him. People in Cleveland used to hate him. Like, he's kind of the new... I don't know who would be the journalist equivalent from, like, 10 years ago that fans, like... Because remember, fans didn't used to know, you know, the journalists or the beat writers primarily. But now it's like, in the age of PTI and around the horn, like, writers are actually sometimes as famous as some of the players.
Yeah, which is crazy to me. I mean, even someone like Kevin Ioli for Yahoo Sports, you know, when he's at a fight, fans will stop him. And Kevin's even not really on TV like that. And people are just stopping him based on his columns on Yahoo. So I couldn't imagine someone who had a TV presence, what they might get on like a day-to-day basis. But it's interesting to watch. One side note, TMZ Sports reached out to Tim Frank of the NBA, and they said there's no current policy against players bringing their kids up, and they're not going to change it. So suck it, media.
And you know, yeah, like, you know, Adam Silver ain't touching that. He's like, oh, what, you want me to?
Right before Father's Day, I'm going to change his policy?
You want me to tell these primarily black players that they can't spend time with their kids or be seen with their kids?
Yeah.
I'm not touching that one.
Nope.
You want to handle this? You want to handle this, Shelly Sterling?
Yeah.
One last thing before we get out of here, Marcus. What'd you think of your boy, Michael Smith, and his beatboxing ability?
He was beatboxing?
On His and Hers. Oh, you didn't see that story?
I saw him cussing.
Yeah, he cussed and he tried to cover it up with a beatbox.
No, I don't think it was a beatbox he tried to. I think he just tried to.
Oh, you think he tried to? He was just trying to.
No, I think he cussed and then he just realized what happened and he just said, uh oh.
Because he was like, you know, guys always doing stupid shit. So I thought he was trying to beatbox.
No, he did. They did a podcast later that day, sort of talking about what happened. He wasn't trying to cover it up. He knew what happened. He sort of surprised himself that that was the first time he said he cussed on air.
It was loud and clear.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like like everybody, you can see Jamel was just like, oh. she looked like a Sherry Martel did in that clip when Booker T said nigga.
Yep.
Like, Hulk Hogan, we coming for you, nigga. Aww.
Oh, Booker.
But hey, he hasn't received any flack from that from ESPN, has he?
He has not. And he didn't receive any flack online. People sort of, you know, it's a human mistake. You know, it happens. And I think it's the way how you handle it. I think that helps a lot. He sort of laughed it off and, you know.
Yeah, because he was like, well, had to happen sometime. Yeah. I'll see y'all later. Yeah. like he made fun of himself. But also, I think, it's because he wasn't saying it about anybody. Like, he was responding to, I guess, the video of that.
The Penn State guy, yeah.
Linebacker that was tackling the tree. And he was like, guys are always doing stupid shit to impress girls, which is true.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything anybody can dispute that. So it's like, I think it would have been different if he had been calling the player a name or something like that.
Yeah, so shout out to Mike and Jamel.
So, will Michael Smith ever cuss on the air again? The numbers say no. That's I'm mad that joke doesn't even work anymore.
Yeah. The show changed. It's not,
never lie, yeah. So, but yeah, shout out to Michael as well as Jamel. But I think that's going to do it this week, Marcus.
That's all I got.
All right. So I was going to say, unless you got anything else. Where can the good people out there hit you up on social media and start an online campaign for you to get on Around the Horn?
Twitter and Instagram at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
My dream foursome on Around the Horn is Blackstone, Vanderberg, Bomani Jones, and Jackie Mack.
Jackie Mack.
I love Jackie Mack.
She's great.
Like, have you met her in real life?
Like, I have. She's really nice.
She seems like a cool person.
Yeah.
Yeah, shout out to you, Jackie Mack, who, like, she knows more. She probably forgot more about basketball than I'll ever know. So you can reach Marcus there. You can reach me on Twitter in the number 8, MOZAIK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Follow the show, Cospod, KOS_POD, Cospod on Twitter. Like, rate, review, and of course, share the show with your friends on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are found. And next week, we're going to be back with an all-new edition of the World's Most Dangerous Sports Show. where we will be talking, of course, about the NBA Conference Finals as they roll on. And who knows, Marcus, we might have a special guest. I'm going to try to connect with Hat Club Andy. Of course, the offer is always out there for our friends over at Black on Black Cinema, one, two, or all, to hop on and chat with us for a bit. And, you know, who knows? It is hockey season. The hockey playoffs are in full effect. In addition to the Hockey Minute, we might talk to Bill and Jamie if I can calm down before we get them on.
All right. Sounds good.
So, because, you know, we got to get to the bottom of this. So, stay tuned. Let's not stay tuned. I guess you can stay tuned until next week. This is the last episode of the last episode 112 we'll ever have, the first and the last. But in a way, every day, Marcus, see, this is how I'm going to spin myself out of this. Every day is the first and last of that day that you'll ever have.
Yeah, keep spinning.
See, this would be so much better if I had a child here to get me out of this.
Yeah.
That's why kids should be allowed at press conferences and on podcasts.
It's a distraction.
Exactly. Pay no attention to the man behind the microphone. And on that note, we are going to get out of here for another week. Thank you for listening. And as always, you can check back in the archives. If you've missed any of the shows, hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/kingsofsport, to ask us questions, leave feedback, whatever you want to do to show us that you are down with the Kings. So, for Marcus Vanderberg, I am the godfather, Nate Milton. Who let that baby in the studio? Because you've been down with the Kings.
Us, the notorious just, please us with your lyrical thesis. We just chillin', milk 'em, top billin', silkin', pure linen, me and little seeds, Malibu sea breeze, Dawn peas, palm trees, cats named Pablo, and milked out Diablo, the williest, what? Bitches be the silliest, the more I smoke, the smaller the silly gets. Room 112, where the players dwell, and stash more cash than Bert Fidel. Inhale, make you feel good like Tony. Pick up in your middle like Moni. Yeah. Yeah. She don't know me, but she's setting up to blow me.
Yeah.
Try to style, sliding off with a homie.
Yeah.
Escada don gotta, player, stay splurging. Game so tight, they call it version.
Oh, I need to know where we stand. Do we share the special thing called love? I know I do. What about you? I just can't get enough of your love.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X. Attack like I just left.